directions, increasing the likelihood of hitting the target. And when that target was a man? Lizzie tightened her jaw and reminded herself to breathe. The metal balls ripped through the flesh like a butcher knife through fine silk, making the grape shot devastatingly effective, especially at close range. She detected a shift in Captain Jones's breathing and tended the cloth over his nose, then slowly, very slowly, drip, drip, drip. She added more chloroform, and his head lolled to one side again. He had strong facial features and was a handsome man in a rough, rugged sense, all except for his gray eyes, which had revealed a kindness that brooked no argument and that thoroughly convinced the onlooker of his honor at first glance. She observed Dr. Phillips as he sutured and prayed for him, for Captain Jones, and for all the men filling this house and the grounds outside. Through the open window to the backyard, she could see lanterns dotting the lawn. The wounded kept coming. The surgery took longer than she'd anticipated, and she detected fatigue in Dr. Phillips, in the way he paused to roll his neck and shoulders, and in the darkened half-moons showing beneath his eyes. She'd overheard soldiers speaking earlier and learned that for the better part of the past week, the Army of Tennessee had slept little and eaten less. They'd marched the near 250 miles from Atlanta up through Georgia and into Tennessee to the town of Columbia. They'd covered ground quickly in order to catch up with the Federal Army, with the hope of flanking their troops and drawing them into battle. When Hood's forces arrived in Spring Hill, a town that lay only 10 miles southeast, by yesterday evening, Hood had apparently given orders to cut off the main road so the Federals couldn't push on toward Nashville. He wanted to fight them then and there while the rebels had them boxed in on either side. But from what she could decipher by listening to the soldiers' discussions, the plan to capture General Schofield's army had apparently come unhinged. Somehow, Schofield managed to move his army past them unmolested, straight up the main road during the dark of night. Two of the soldiers said they'd actually seen regiment after regiment of Federal soldiers quietly passing by them, not 300 feet away. But they were only privates, they said, and since they'd been given no orders to attack, they stayed by their fires and did nothing. Hence, General Schofield's army had arrived first in Franklin earlier that morning, and the die had been cast. The soldiers described General Hood as being enraged when he learned about the missed opportunity. Not for the first time that evening, Lizzie thought of Fountain Carter and his family, and hoped they were safe and far from the dangers of battle. But if they were still in the house, she prayed the Federal officers who had most likely taken quarter there were treating them well. She sent up prayers for her parents and siblings who lived near downtown Franklin, too. They were a safer distance away and well behind the line of enemy cannons, but still. Knowing her parents, she knew they were worried sick about her and the McGavicks. She'd send them word at first opportunity, but first, to make it through this night. "I'm finished with this leg, Miss Clouston." Pulled back to the moment, Lizzie nodded. "Now, for the right leg." The doctor gestured. "I'll move to the other side of the table, and I'll need you to hand me my instruments, if you would." Lizzie stepped to one side to make room for him to pass, all while keeping close watch on Captain Jones. "If you see an attendant, Miss Clouston, we need more bandages and suture thread. We're nearly out."
"Yes, sir. I'll keep watch."
But mostly, Lizzie watched the doctor as he examined the captain's right leg.
"Straight forceps,"
Dr. Phillips pointed, and Lizzie placed the surgical instrument in his palm. As the doctor extracted the grape shot, Captain Jones's breathing altered for a second time. Lizzie administered more chloroform, and he soon drifted off again, somewhere beyond the confines of Winder's bedroom. Maybe, as earlier, he was dreaming of home. He'd called out for Susan, his wife, Lizzie presumed. He'd also whispered the name Lena, their daughter, perhaps? Or his sister? Did Mrs. Roland Jones know where her husband was?